This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and on today's show, my guest, Michael Gilbert, is the author of The Disposable Male. Michael is a senior fellow at the Center for the Digital Future, which is at the Annenberg School at the University of Southern California, USC. He's a former university lecturer and a former research analyst. He writes about sociobiology and evolutionary psychology, and Center for the Digital Future, that's a research and policy center. I think it's what they call a think tank. And Michael is just a font of information about men, women, sex, and evolution, and how all of this affects our actual psychology and behavior. And so today that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about how evolution affects psychology. We're going to talk a little bit about men's and women's sexual agendas, where they come from, and how they have been changing. We're going to learn a little bit about what Michael calls our natural heritage. And out of all that, I think we'll get some sense about men's role in society and how it's changing. So,
what I'm really doing over that expanse is giving the reader a sense of how an evolutionist, a Darwinian, would look at the world. It's really, for those of us who don't believe we got here on Noah's Ark, it's really a version of the creation story. For the 6 million years we spent out on the savanna until we discovered agriculture 10,000 years ago, life was short and brutal. Offspring died or were left to die if they were weak. And clearly the best strategy, sexual strategy, reproductive strategy, for men was plant your seed as widely as you can. These are, in other words, deep biological and evolutionary issues are still governing how we, men and women, think about issues as fundamental as sex and kids and going to work. The superficial male trigger that worked out on the savanna and still works in a lot of hot clubs around town, I guess. And I wanted to make the point that, you know, pornography speaks directly to males. It's wanton females, you know, readily available for procreative purposes. And it's so interesting because women gravitate to the romance novel, which puts sexual intimacy into a context, into a kind of a relationship setting. Interestingly enough, men have estrogen and women have testosterone. And in fact, as we age, the hormonal balances shift because men's testosterone edges off, and their estrogen levels start to come up, and suddenly men's fantasies start to shift from dominance to submission once in a while.
Welcome to the show, Michael Gilbert.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to just dive right in. That title, The Disposable Male, being a male, definitely I had a moment of, I'm disposable? Ouch! What do you mean? What do you mean by the disposable male?
Well, you know, the subtitle of the book is Sex, Love, and Money, Your World Through Darwin's Eyes. And what I try to do in the first half of the book is just bring the reader through our past from the Big Bang to 14 billion years ago to the Big Bang that ended World War II, and along the way in that first half, explain things about why we stood up, our ancestors stood up on 2 feet, and how relationships developed between the sexes, and why we developed skills such as language and the ability to use tools, and try and keep it light and breezy. But what I'm really doing over that expanse is giving the reader a sense of how an evolutionist, a Darwinian, would look at the world. Mm-hmm. It's really, for those of us who don't believe we got here on Noah's Ark, it's really a version of the creation story. And in the second half of the book, we take this POV, this perspective, and we focus it on men today, women today, relationships, family, kids, why we go to work. And looking through these eyes, looking through the eyes of an evolutionist, one of the first things that I see as a broad social trend is that we've kind of marginalized a lot of men. Not the alpha men at the top, they always do great, and they're lately doing better than ever. But down in the ranks, I think that men have been a little sidelined as women have moved into areas around resource provision and careers. And of course, women's particular zone of biological reproduction is kind of foreclosed to men. So it's my sense that we're kind of maybe not asking enough of men out there. And maybe we're asking a little too much of women, in particular working mothers, especially single working mothers. So the title comes from the notion that looking through this evolutionary point of view, we see this kind of broad sort of social trend. But the evolutionary perspective, the evolutionary eye view of life is something that has a lot of potential, Chip. There's a lot of useful ways that we can look at things from the base level of our sexual desires and interests all the way up to kind of how we organize our societies.
Well, help me understand a little bit why an evolutionary point of view is useful. I mean, I didn't read the whole book, but I read all the excerpts on your website, and the thing I sort of stepped back and had a moment of, oh my God, are we locked into this? Is this like, you know, this is just the way it is? Why is this looking backwards useful?
Well, you know, it's really not so much looking backward as I prefer to think of it as honoring our past.
Mm.
It's great that we've evolved to very sophisticated levels in our society, but little boys and little girls come out of the womb and join the world, and they're not blank slates. They're carrying genetic equipment that's 5, 6, 7 million years old, some of it, some of our most basic operating functions like breathing, for instance. So we can climb the higher levels of our aspirations, but we've got to honor, I think, the base part of our nature. An example of how an evolutionary perspective would be useful in let's take our favorite subject, which is, say, sex. Out on, for men who don't get pregnant, who don't really, in a sense, bear the biological consequences of sex, for the 6 million years we spent out on the savanna until we discovered agriculture 10,000 years ago, life was short and brutal. Offspring died or were left to die if they were weak. And clearly the best strategy, sexual strategy, reproductive strategy for men was plant your seed as widely as you can. There were no consequences. You put your tail between your leg and went off and looked, for the next conquest. On the other hand, women get pregnant. They carry this infant for 9 months in their body. They then have an obligation that may be with them for years. And the result of this dynamic, I think, is that I think in the back of the book I say, you know, why is it that men are so interested in getting to the sex part and women want to talk about relationship? And it's for this reason. These are, in other words, deep biological and evolutionary issues are still governing how we, men and women, think about issues as fundamental as sex and kids and going to work. So it's important to understand that to abandon our natural heritage, our genetic bequest, and construct, you know, brand new paradigms based on what we think in our mind is going to work is, to me, a denial of the past. We, I think, need to root ourselves, anchor ourselves there before we start to climb into the higher levels of you know, what we want to achieve in life and in society.
And yet, it seems like in the last, really in the last two or three generations, there seems to have been a huge deviation from what was normal for human beings. I mean, suddenly, pretty much with the advent of World War II and thereafter,
mm-hmm.
women in the workforce, women being single parents, smaller families, it feels like there's something changing, yes?
There's no doubt, and I think that has to do with technology. I think it has to do with the deferment of marriage. I mean, 2, 3, 4 generations ago, a 16, 17, 18-year-old woman went from her parents' home to the home of her husband. The average age for marriage now is currently 25 for a woman, 27 for a man. And so this means that women are sprung free. They've now got to fend for themselves, and thankfully, the world has opened up for women, and the opportunities are there now, but so are the obligations. You know, there was an article in the New York Times just a few weeks ago that talked about studies done on happiness, and in the mid-70s, women were slightly happier than men. And in this recent version of these studies, now men are slightly happier than women. And the reason is that, according to these studies, was that women now have taken on these additional burdens in the world, and yet they still get stuck with, you know, 90% of the things at home and times with kids and so forth. And the men are working less and relaxing more. That's apparently why they're happy. So, yes, things have changed dramatically, but it isn't a foregone conclusion that it's all for the better or all for the good. And so I think the story isn't yet complete about that, but there are clear and obvious signs now that these changes are not really necessarily working out or being constructive for everybody in our society.
And somewhere in all this, it seems to me this must fuel a kind of adversarial politics between men and women. You know, suddenly we're all competing for the same role.
Right. Well, this is one of the complaints I have, really, about the toughy end of the feminist movement, and that is that they kind of detached women from the family. They constructed a politics, if you will, based on victimization and competition, and we can do what you can do. And you know, to me, men and women are a team. We're a partnership, and we're enhanced by each other's strengths. Even in business, you know, do you want a partner who's exactly good at what you're good at and exactly bad at what you're bad at? That's the worst possible combination, to my mind. So, I'm a great believer in not only acknowledging the differences between the sexes, but celebrating those differences and indeed using them to improve our position. I want to be strong where my partner isn't so good, and I want her to be great where maybe I'm not so good. Then together, we're better off. And indeed, this setting of men and women toe to toe, and you know, you got five, I want five, is to me, I call them the gender mathematicians, and I think that they've led men and women astray.
Gender mathematicians. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, men are. 62% of managers. Well, we better make sure that women are 50% managers. It's kind of like a mathematical, you know, sort of competitiveness.
Yeah, it's trying to manage society by quotas.
Exactly. It's managing by results rather than creating opportunities.
Yeah. Listen, I love all this. I want to talk a lot more, but I also want to take a break. So we're going to pause, and we'll be right back.
In the area of sponsors, I have a new sponsor, audiblepodcasts.com. Audible's the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, and Sex, Love, and Intimacy listeners can get a free audio book when you go to audiblepodcast.com/love. So you go to audiblepodcast.com/love. Check out the titles. If you're liking listening to Bill, there are wonderful collections of erotica. Just go to Erotica and Sexuality, and there's collections from Penthouse, there's collections from Susie Bright, there's one of my favorite erotic books in audio, The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty, and you get a free download. When you get a free book when you sign up for the service, and it's really cool because if for any reason you don't like it, you can cancel within 2 weeks. So it just seems like a no-lose opportunity to check out some more erotica and more sounds like this, and you win and I win. So do me a favor, go visit audiblepodcast.com/love and sign up today. We'll be right back.
Listen to Expanded Lovemaking, a weekly internet audio program and podcast for men and women on Personal Life Media. Get advanced techniques that expand your lovemaking bliss.
Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Michael Gilbert. He's the author of The Disposable Male. And we've been talking a little bit about men and women and evolutionary psychology, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I want to see if we can steer this conversation a little bit more towards sexuality and towards some of the sexual differences between men and women and mating strategies. And I'm sure you have a point of view about all that.
Oh, yeah. Goodness, I got a point of view about all this stuff. Okay? Probably too many points of view. You know, just drawing into sexuality for a moment, let's get right down to it. And
please.
I was alluding to the superficial male trigger that worked out on the savannah and still works in a lot of hot clubs around town, I guess. And I wanted to make the point that, you know, pornography speaks directly to males. It's wanton females, you know, readily available for procreative purposes. And it's so interesting because women gravitate to the romance novel, which puts sexual intimacy into a context, into a kind of a relationship setting. A masterful male comes along, he's a powerhouse, he's smitten by the female who draws him in with her tempestuous capacities and finally settles this, you know, strong bull down to happy pastures. Pornography is the male romance novel. it's the way men think about sexuality. At least a lot of men do when they get down to the nub of it. But I wanted also for your listeners to explain what does he mean by an evolutionary perspective applied to modern life, and I want to take a moment, Chip, and talk about the beloved high heel shoe.
Oh, please.
I don't know who it was who invented this, but by golly, this guy needs to be given the Nobel Prize because the high heel shoe is a fabulous thing. We never do see those glamour shots of women wearing Birkenstocks. It's always that 3-inch heel. And there's a great reason for it. And as an evolutionist looking at that, at the proposition of the high heel, I see this. I see a shoe that splays the toes and makes them look longer, heightens the arch, and heightens the outline of the back, the Achilles tendon. All of which is important out on the savannah because you've got a child clinging to you. You need to be able to pivot and run and get out of the way of some very dangerous things. The high heel extends the leg to make it look long. It gives the ankle a kind of thoroughbred feel. It enhances the musculature of the leg and shows that kind of strength. It provides a slightly more receptive sexual posture for the woman. It hobbles her. She's out on a date. She's kind of hobbled up on point here and playing into the protective male instincts. So it may be a high heel to the average guy out on the street, but to an evolutionist, it's quite a piece of work.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing we talk about in the book, because I'm constantly trying to make the point to the reader that this is an ancient business. This is modern. This is you know, we are creatures of, we're animals, and share 98% of our genetic structure with chimpanzees. This shows you, by the way, just how important 2% can be.
Yeah, really.
But the reality is that we have this side of ourselves, and although it plays itself out in sophisticated ways in sophisticated cultures like ours, still, underneath it all, there are these evolutionary biological themes, and if people can understand that and look at the world that way, I think they will be benefited not only having a better time with sex, but also in a very, very general sense. It's a lot more than figuring out who the alpha male is in the room. There's a rich trove of information in evolution and evolutionary thinking.
Isn't a lot of this run by our hormones? Isn't this when I'm 20 years old as a male, you know, I can barely think for the testosterone that's running through me. And I've met so many women in their late 20s, early 30s that biological clock is ticking so loud that they can barely hear their own thoughts. Isn't a lot of this just run by our hormones?
Absolutely. I have a section in the book that's called The Tyranny of Testosterone.
Ah, yeah.
And as young men, when we're in our 20s, you know, the power of that push can be, you know, to get across the room to talk to that hottie and push that agenda, it's awesome. As we get older, we escape the tyranny of men do, I think as they move into their 30s. And this is one of the good news things about evolution and sex. And that is that, yes, it's hugely dependent on hormones, but interestingly enough, men have estrogen and women have testosterone. And in fact, as we age, the hormonal balances shift because men's testosterone edges off and their estrogen levels start to come up, and suddenly men's fantasies start to shift from dominance to submission once in a while. And the inverse is happening with women, which may be why men and women are so designed to stay together, because I think as women age, they develop a little of the tough, assertive side that testosterone delivers as their estrogen levels start to diminish. So, yeah, I think libido is a hormone. We are powerfully driven by them. Adolescent boys go through intense rushes of testosterone that can be 4 to 6 times the level that an adult male endures, which explains why a lot of 14-year-old boys are off jerking off half the time.
Yeah, it certainly is resonating with me.
and it's because, you know, it's really powerful. Now, testosterone drives a lot of other things beyond sex. It's part of that single-minded purposefulness that you mm-hmm. see in men. It's the source of that prickly anger sometimes when you can see a guy getting, you know, boiling over. It can run out of control a little bit and create some unhappy situations. In a sense shapes the male body. If women like some of those strong lines and jaw lines in men, it's kind of testosterone based. So it's an important hormone, and it plays a significant role in our sexuality for sure.
I think what I'm hearing though, now I'm putting this together differently than you just said it, but as we figure out how to live longer, our bodies, you know, my 54-year-old body has a hormonal component that's very different than it was 0 to 40, and so as men and women are living longer, in a way we're living into a whole different thing than what our biology evolved for.
I think so. Yeah, I think that. Strong, settled, mature men who are comfortable in their masculinity, as they move into their 40s and 50s, they develop a very acute feminine side. You really develop that sense of wanting to be, you know, handled or sort of taken charge of. And you come to understand, I think, a lot of the issues that emerge from the estrogen-laden female.
Mm-hmm. And I think vice versa.
Sorry?
And I think vice versa. I think the same
Correct.
Thing's happening for women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's great. I'm one of the ways that I sort of measure my sexual health is that over the years, the interest I have in women has sort of aged along with me.
And I yes,
I'm comfortable with that. I like that. I'm in my early 60s, and I'm not interested in 20-year-old women.
Yes.
I'm interested in 45 and 50 and 55-year-old women.
Yeah, I think there's a distinction there. I think my guess would be, and I don't want to speak for you, but when I talk to men. It's the difference between I can now look at a 20-year-old and really see how beautiful she is and really be turned on by that and really, but have absolutely no desire to create a relationship with this person because what would we talk about? And I don't want to be that 20-year-old stud anymore.
Right.
But the visual is still there, and I notice the same thing's true with women. That I talk to 50-year-old women, and they can see the eye candy in that 20-year-old stud.
Right.
But, you know, excuse me, the nights are long and cold, and you want somebody you can talk to and laugh.
Indeed you do. You know, if I use the metaphor of being in a restaurant and a mother and her daughter come in, and mm-hmm. the mother's 50 and the daughter's 25, and if they're, you know, equally attractive, well-preserved women,
right.
I'm going to look at the daughter, but I'll be fantasizing about the mother.
Right.
Because I'm more interested when it comes to sex, I'm more interested in an experience than I am in an activity. And I think with younger women, it's less of a participant sport. I think a 50-year-old woman has matured, has learned a lot about men and how they function, or at least one hopes they have, and brings a maturity and a depth to even just the intimate part that I think is just really important. So
this is all fascinating. I'm really enjoying talking to you. I want to take a short break, give a chance for us to support our sponsors a little bit. We'll be right back.
Before we go to break, I want you to know that I have a new sponsor, SoundsPublishing.com. SoundsPublishing.com delivers exceptional audio erotica. And it's really audio erotica. I mean, this is like CDs and downloads of erotic fantasies, erotic stories. They're professionally produced. They're written by some Emmy Award-winning writers. They're read by real actors with very, very sexy voices. And they can bring a whole lot of pleasure and fantasy to your love life. And because you are a listener to my show, I want you to know that we have a special deal. If you go to soundspublishing.com, and /offers, where they ask for a promo code, put in the word love, and you'll get 10% off on stories that can be sensual, romantic, sexy. Some of them are wicked, some of them are wild. They actually group their stories as sugar, spank, and spice, and they're well named. These are things you can listen to with your lover and kind of maybe get an idea about how to have more fantasy in your life. So please go to soundspublishing.com/offers, put in the promo code LOVE, L-O-V-E, order up a story, order up a compilation CD, enjoy, and you'll benefit, my sponsor will benefit, and it sounds like a win-win to me. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back.
Listen to On the Minds of Men, Uncensored Sex Talk with Dr. Lori, a weekly audio program bringing the best in sex therapy to your life on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Michael Gilbert, the author of The Disposable Male, and we've been talking about men and women and evolutionary psychology and sociobiology, and I'm just having a grand old time. I love thinking about all this stuff. So, men, women, equality. You know, there's somehow often perceived in this model of men as hunters and women as gatherers that somehow men are superior. Is that sort of what biology is telling us?
I think it's probably, if it's telling us anything at all, it's probably telling us the opposite. I think that women with their much more elaborate body, the fact that they incubate the child, I think of men as kind of barren, that their genitalia are hanging out in front of them unprotected. They don't have any of the mammary erotic capacities that women have. They aren't tied to lunar cycles in the way that women are. To me, it's impossible to talk about the sexes without thinking of them as equal. But I want to say that, put in quotes, equal to does not mean the same as.
Good point.
And that's a difference that I think we need to celebrate and enjoy. Wouldn't it be a dull world to wake up to just one gender? So, as we get into as we talk about these things, and as people kind of get into the book, I try to remind them frequently that although there are distinctions and powerful and important ones between the sexes, that underneath it all there is a basic equality that is that needs to be at the source of it, and part of it relates to the discussion we had in the last section where I talked about the fact that men have estrogen and women have testosterone. You know, we're not on a continuum. Definitely men primarily have masculine orientations and women primarily feminine orientations, but the hormones and the neurons and a lot of the evolutionary history is something we share. And so it's really important, I think, just wanted to say to your listeners that that even though my theories relate to enjoying and the differences between the species and the sexes rather and the specialization of the sexes, that this is all anchored on a very powerful notion that the sexes are born equal.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing you say is that when you really look at the at the biology, at the evolution, at our common history, what you see is we are a species with a sex divide meant to be partners.
Absolutely.
You know, that there is a complementary aspect to what it is to be male that's complemented by female. There's a complementary aspect about what it is to be female that's complemented by male, and that there's a natural partnership there. And it's in that way that I think you're speaking about equality. Am I understanding you correctly?
Absolutely right, and exactly right. I mean, we are, the world comes in pairs, and it's just important that we understand and accept that individual members of these pairs have their own ways of doing it. And by the way, there are men who are born nurturers, and there are
right.
women who love competition.
I was just going to say all that.
And certainly that's true, but we're speaking in broad general terms here. But absolutely, it's, you know, we prosper and we'll reach our highest potential in the context of good, close, intimate relationships. There's nothing like a good, solid, long-lasting relationship for sex, for anything. The trust gets built up, and the sense of a shared experiences. So, I think the sexes have a joyous future together. But we need to get there by understanding and honoring our terrific individual talents and abilities.
Yeah.
And we're living in a culture, I think, Chip, that works hard to deny some of these distinctions that I think are so exquisite.
Yeah. I want to just a little shout out to my gay, lesbian, transgendered, and intersex friends that I notice when we have these conversations, I'm looking at a population of 6 or 7 billion people and kind of looking at the center of that curve.
Right.
And that the reality is a lot more confused, and you know, like when there's a whole lot more choices. One of my favorite psychologists, Andrea Dworkin, wrote a sentence that I just love. She said that the system of gender polarity in our culture is real but not true. You know, yeah, it's real. There's a male and there's a female, and there's a truth here that there's a lot more than that when we start talking about individuals and how individuals grow and who we are. So I want to acknowledge that all that's true, and there's a real value in looking at sort of the broadest section of the bell curve here and seeing things.
Right. We one very intelligent gay reviewer of my book said he felt I had to stick to the mean. I had to stick to the story, the central story, which is what you're alluding to. We all of us, gay and straight, got here through that that dynamic. But I think, you know, we're 6 billion souls. We don't all have to be breeders, and there's no reason why we can't grant our gay and lesbian and transgendered citizens as much freedom and to enjoy life as the rest of us have.
Cool. Now, I'm sure after listening to all this, people want to know, where do I get that book? So if people want to contact you or get your book, how do they do that?
Well, it's all over the Internet, at all the standard places. It's supposedly moving into the stores in September of 2007. And if it's not on the shelf, it certainly can be ordered. The book's website is, I think, an interesting place for readers who may be a little bit interested in this, and that it's just thedisposablemail.com. And there they'll find quite a few excerpts and outlines. There's an interview of myself and a little bit of bio, and some resources, in fact, for men and for women and for people interested in evolution. So that would be where they could go. There's even a way through that website to send me a note if they'd like to.
That's actually how I found you.
Fair enough. And I'm pleased to hear from people and... there you go. It's just been great talking to you and your audience.
Thank you so much for making this time. I really appreciate talking to you. Thank
All right.
you so much.
As always, we like to make sure that you have an exercise that you can do that comes out of each of our interviews. And Michael asked if I had one, and so I'd like to suggest a nice little exercise in how we get to know each other a little better. Make some time, maybe a half an hour or so, when you're not going to be interrupted by phones or children, maybe after the kids have gone to bed, when you can just talk. And here's the thing I really want to invite you to do. I want to invite you to sit with your partner and each of you share back and forth one thing I love about being a man, one thing that I really don't like about being a man, one thing I love about being a woman, one thing I really don't love about being a woman, and just go back and forth, taking turns. First to me, the man goes, one thing I love about being a man, one thing I don't love being about a man. Then the woman goes, one thing I love about being a woman, one thing I don't love about being a woman. Then the man goes, one thing I love about, and back and forth like that, but for a good 10, 15 minutes, and just notice what you hear and notice what you say. Don't think about it too much. Just notice the first things that come to mind about what you love about your gender and what you don't love about being your gender. And then talk a little bit about anything that surprised you, anything you were surprised you said, anything you were surprised you heard. One of the ways that we can get past these differences that divide us and get past these stories about how men and women are different is when we share at a pretty deep level some of the fundamental ways that we are actually very similar. So I want to invite you, try this exercise, try it tonight.
And I want to say to our listeners, if you would like text and transcripts of this program or any program on the Personal Life Media Network, why, all you need to do is go to personallifemedia.com, personallifemedia, all as one word, .com, and we'll send them to you. Also, you can find them. Also, if you would like to send me some comments, if you would like to give me some feedback or suggest ideas for shows, please feel free to contact me, Chip, at personallifemedia.com. You can also actually call me on the telephone. You can call 206-350-5333. 206-350-5333. Please leave your name, leave the name of my show, Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and leave your question or comment and your phone number and or an email address. And just know that when you leave a message at this number, it indicates to us your agreement that we can use what you left on air. So if what you want to say, if you have a message for me that you don't want on air, please send it to me as an email. Don't leave it on our voicemail system. This brings us to the end of another show. Thanks for listening, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Thanks. Bye.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.